Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Lock Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. No Connor this week. He's out of town. We got quite the show, though. We're going to go over a little Patreon question of the week, go into some Ledgestone results, a few storylines from that, have a little Trevor's trivia, and then round the show out with our power ranking update. Could be an interesting power ranking update, to be honest with you. A lot of interesting things happened out there. But before we get into today's episode, let's go ahead and thank today's sponsor. Today's show is brought to you by Manscaped. Your body deserves products that are not only skin safe, but made with safe ingredients. And that's where Manscaped's Platinum Package comes in. From razors to shower care, this package goes above the gold standard for your body hair. So treat yourself with the world's finest toys at Manscaped.com and use our code GRIPLOCKED for 20% off plus free shipping. The Platinum Package 4.0 is the one-stop shop for the man who deserves it all. They designed this package to allow you to fully align your entire hygiene routine with elite products. Inside the Platinum Package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ears and nose hair trimmer, Ultra Premium body wash, Ultra Premium 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, Ultra Premium deodorant, Crop Preserver anti-chafing ball deodorant, Crop Reviver ball spray toner, anti-chafing boxers, and the Shed travel bag to hold all your goods while you're traveling. Now let me tell you about this Lawnmower 4.0 body trimmer. This and the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer both feature proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to protect your delicate parts and holes, and both are waterproof as well, so you can shave with less mess. The Platinum Package 4.0 covers all the bases you need from head to toe, so get 20% off and free shipping with code GRIPLOCKED at Manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at Manscaped.com and use code GRIPLOCKED. Use the Platinum Package because the gold standard is no longer good enough. All right, let's kick the show off with a little Patreon question of the week. And if you're wondering where this question comes from, it comes from patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can join the Heiser Club over there. You can actually get a 7-day free trial and try to check everything out, watch some content, and see if it's for you before you have to pay to be a part of the Heiser Club. The tier started as low as $5 a month. And we have a weekly podcast on there called the Heiser Club Mailbag, where we answer each and every question that gets put in there. Typically ends up being about an hour long because you guys have some great questions. Some are disc golf related, some are not. Sometimes we have fan mail packages that we open. It's a great time. So if that sounds interesting to you, you can check it out over at patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. But this one came in this past week from Nate McLean, and you actually weren't on the mailbag.
I wasn't.
This past week. So this will be Trevor's first time answering it. But Nate wants to know, has there been a specific disc that any of you have really wanted to like but just couldn't seem to get comfortable with after throwing it?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot of times a disc comes about that you, like, for whatever reason. I think a lot of times it's because, like, at least when I was younger especially, this would usually arise because of a certain pro player throwing a disc. And you try and, like, you want to be like them. So you kind of force your way into it. And then I think later on it's usually because a disc looks cool that you try and, like, force it in your bag. So, like, A good example recently would be the Gavin Rathbun Enforcers that came out. They were one of the first Orbit, like Halo-type discs to do the two-tone colors. So they just came in and we were just stunned. We could not believe how cool they looked. Enforcer's a great disc. I have just never been in love with the feel of the Enforcer. They feel a little shallow to me. So I knew that if I were putting that in my bag, I would have been forcing the issue. When I was younger, I think this effect mostly came into play with, so like when I was younger, the Innova bag was the bag. It was like you threw Rocks, T-Birds, Destroyers, Firebirds, AVRs, you know, that was like the thing. So we all would, I would do this for sure, is I would force, the big one was having a lot of rocks in your bag. That was like the cool thing, to have a lot of rocks. So I would force rocks into my bag way before they needed to be there. There was so much overlap just for the fact that I could have like 5 or 6 rocks. So that one's a little bit less feel based, a little more like there was not any strategy. It was just, I wanted to have a lot of rocks in my bag. A good feel based one would maybe be, I would say the Raptor. For a while, I tried to force that one to work because it was really popular, but another one that just, I loved the flight of the Raptor. The feel just didn't quite work for me, especially on a forehand. So I just like was only throwing for backhands, and it's kind of counterintuitive. But the rocks, man. I mean, I remember like I would get like 3 new rock threes, and I'd put them all in my bag at the same time. And like, I'll season them in eventually. But I just want to have a lot of rocks.
Yeah, and you just choose like, this one's going to be the one I throw the most up front.
Yeah, I'm just like wasting space with the other ones.
I did the same thing. Awesome. I think we all did at some point. Because like all the Innova Pros had 6 rocks. Yeah. You just didn't. It just didn't compute.
They'd be like, I got this one from my second cousin in his basement collection.
Yeah.
And like, we couldn't do that. So now we have things like used sections to shop from. When I first started disc golf, like, I didn't have a disc golf shop to go to. So, like, I bought my disc new.
Yeah, all my were new. I just had a bunch of Casey Pro Rocks trying to beat them in.
Yeah.
The main disc for me, because I actually, what's funny is the Enforcer, I love the hand feel of. I was actually literally just feeling one in our front section, one of the, like, Lucid Ice Orbit ones.
They're not
like,
bad. It's just not as good as other discs.
I feel like I like shallow discs.
You do.
Because I even used to throw like X3s.
Yeah. I could never throw the X series. Yeah. I'm the complete opposite. I usually prefer a much deeper disc, and a lot of people like the shallow.
The Raptor, because we're also the opposite. The Raptor, I loved the feel of the Raptor. I never liked the flight of it. Because it was the Raptor and the Felon are the same disc.
Yeah.
To me. They actually feel kind of similar too. But they both boast what seems to be a Firebird type flight, but they don't have that. They have more of like
a step down.
They're kind of like an Onyx almost. Like the Onyx and the Raptor, I think, have a lot more overlap, but the Onyx had a little more glide than the Raptors. The Raptor had like less glide, but I would get it to flip up a lot of Raptors I threw.
Yeah.
And I had to like shop for like Crystal Raptors to have that like Firebird-esque flight when the answer was the Predator the whole time. I just never knew.
It's true.
So I was just forcing Raptors in. But I loved the feel of the Raptor. I didn't like the flight. The one that I could never get comfortable throwing but tried to force it was the Buzz. Mm. For multiple times, and I'm sure it hasn't even been the last time, because the flight of the Buzz, I am in love with.
Yeah.
I love it. I just cannot get comfortable with it in my hand.
For a lot of people say that. I like the feel of the Buzz. And I'm not... Mid-range is... I typically throw beaded mids, but lately, like nowadays, I have a Buzz and a Quake in my bag. Like, and a zone, if you want to call that a mid. Like, so I do, you know, dabble in the beadless as well. But I just, for me, the Buzz, I definitely used to try to force that one in. But it wasn't until I got one that was beat in and flips and rides that, like, I enjoyed having a Buzz in my bag.
I always loved the flight because you can find some that I could get some that would, like, flip up to flat. That's what I always loved, was a flip up to flat and it would hyzer out. But because I don't know what it is, maybe it's the depth, but like I feel like MD3s are similar depth, and I love those.
It's definitely not deeper than an MD3.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about the Buzz, but I grip lock it so much.
I think Connor says, Connor has the opposite issue with Buzzes, I think. He can't hold on to them.
Yeah, well, we have completely different hands.
Yeah.
I think Connor's issue is he has really, really dry hands, and Discraft's premium plastic is so slick.
It is.
So I don't think it's necessarily just the Buzz.
Yeah.
I think Connor would just struggle with most Discraft premium plastic. Because nice. I have like very not moist hands, but like I don't have grip problems with it. And so, but mine is just like the Buzz just always comes out late. It's always, and you want to go to the Buzz in wooded shots because it's so straight. They're like, I pick it so much in the woods.
Maybe it's just because they're kind of, and just never work a lot of times. I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't know. But the MD3 is where I've landed and love it. But there you go, Nate. And if you want to have your question featured on the show, join the Hyzer Club. All right, let's hop into some Ledgestone results. We're going to start it off with FPO. So Missy Gannon took it down again. We had Missy Gannon, Owen Scoggins in second, and then you had Sarah Hokum and Ella Hansen in third. Very, very solid play from Missy, leading to back-to-back wins out here. She was, especially in, I think it was that third round at Sunset, it was kind of rainy, and she kept putting herself a little bit out of position and was just making putts.
Yeah.
And she looked very, very solid out there all weekend. They actually on coverage told a story where they had like a basket under a tent, and like most of the players were putting and warming up over there. And Missy was out at just the normal practice basket by herself. It was in the wind and the rain. And apparently a like spectator walked up and was like, or a volunteer, someone walked up and was like, "Hey Missy, you know, there's a basket under a tent over here. Like, so in the dry," and she,
"Oh, what good's that gonna
be?" And she turned around and said, "Well, how's that going to help me?"
Yeah.
And then turned back and just kept putting, and everyone else was warming up on the dry basket.
Yeah, she's got a point.
Kind of baller move, though.
It is.
Because she was, the weather looked kind of nasty. It was on and off nasty all weekend, yeah. But especially that third round looked kind of gross out at Sunset.
The third round was a separator round.
Yeah.
Some people did not like that weather.
Yeah, and she played solid all weekend. Owen Scoggins, no surprise to see her name up in there. She was able to stay in contention. And I think these courses both play kind of, I don't want to say to her strength, because I think Owen Scoggins will compete with anyone in the world on courses that don't just require bomber distance. Yeah. And Sunset, although it is a golf course, it doesn't have that many like bomb it out there. Like, you can get a stroke or two on the field if you have bomber distance, but it's not like some of the courses they play where it's like you have to have distance to compete.
Yeah. Yeah. Owen's a solid player. And I just don't see Owen as the type of player who has enough in the tank usually to go out and beat somebody having a really good weekend. But she always has solid weekends.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, one Missy Gannon really good weekend away from perhaps getting a win. I'm really impressed with Missy Gannon. It's awesome that she was able to defend a title. She was first in fairways hit, first C2 in regulation, and third in C1X putting, which is very important. I think she was 83% from C1X.
Who beat her? Owen and...
I forget who the other one was. But in any case, you know, the stats were there, and she's been good.
Emily Beach was the other. Owen and Emily Beach.
That's very good for Emily. She's been good all year, Missy has. I haven't really seen her able to win down the stretch. She had some strokes to play with in this case, and obviously Kristen not being there. Now, I will say, with Kristen not there, she has been really one of the more consistent players. You know, I would consider other players such as Haley King maybe more threatening to win going into an event, but as you saw from Haley King's performance, you know, she's not nearly as consistent as Missy Gannon, I don't think. Yeah, I would say more so the storylines from this event were some of the players that in a no Kristen field, which in this, like, that should be like the alarm bells are going off. This could be our chance to get a win. You had Katrina and Haley both really play awful, especially Kat. And then Valerie Mandahano missed the cut just to kind of throw. I mean, she's, you know, still kind of making her way back from injury. But Katrina especially.
Katrina Allen, it was a very surprising performance, mainly because I thought Sunset would play well to her strength. And I thought she'd be able to hold her own at Northwoods. She's played good at both of these courses before, but 12 over for the tournament. She made the cut, so 12 over looks a little worse than like a Valerie Mandahano who missed the cut and shot 8 over. Sayananda, another player that I believe missed the cut, 11 over.
Yep.
So a lot of players that could have done very well. We've heard their name. I mean, Sayananda is one of the few players to beat Kristen and get a win this year.
Yeah.
Misses the cut. Paige Hsu missed the cut. Rebecca Cox missed the cut. A lot of players just did not show up and play well.
Northwoods is just a tough one.
It is. But one player that surprised me and did play well was Ella Hansen.
Yeah.
Sunset Hills, not a shocker.
Yeah.
Sunset Hills seems like a Holland Hanley, Ella Hansen course, which Holland came in seventh. She also played well. Ella Hansen, though, was able to hold her own at Northwoods, which I didn't expect it. Just straight up, I did not expect Ella Hansen to perform well out here this weekend.
I think Northwoods is almost so difficult. I do think people get caught up in the narrative a lot. Like, people talk about Woods players versus like players that are more favored in open conditions, which is basically another way of saying you're not as accurate, but you throw far. because I do think that's a funny narrative in general, the whole Woods player, because it basically just means like you're good at hitting gaps. You're just an accurate thrower.
Well, I think it
usually plays that people don't throw as far. So it's like you have more of an advantage in the Woods because not only are you accurate, but your distance isn't going to cost you.
I think it's more so the typical lines you hit. Because like double G and it's Drew Gibson.
Less Heiser, more.
Maybe not Drew Gibson.
More
he has
tunnely
that,
shots.
Yeah, I think it's more so like, because some players will still choose that straight shot even in the wide open.
Yeah.
Those are the players that do good in the woods. So even players that have a lot of distance, the problem is when you have a lot of distance, how do you not go for Heisers and big flex shots and stuff? And so I think that's where some players like get that distance versus woods nomenclature. Is because of like, it's not necessarily one's more accurate than the other.
None of the best words I've ever heard you use on this show.
Nomenclature?
Yeah. I was like, what just happened?
That's where I think that comes from, though, is not necessarily one's more accurate than the other. I think it's the shot shape and the scramble ability, because that's what separates Paul. Paul can play in the open with anyone, but typically Paul has been not even noticed as a woods player, but he succeeds in the woods a lot because he's so good at that dead straight shot and at that in scrambling. And that's where Ricky is so good with his forehand that he kind of like overlapses some woodsy players.
Yeah.
And that's where you see these like distance guys fall off somewhere.
There is certain shots that work a lot better in the woods, that's for sure. And honestly, but I do think Northwoods, like as much as that becomes a narrative really quickly when we talk about like the wooded course on tour, I think that it doesn't matter who you are. A lot of it just comes down to, are you throwing well that day? And if the answer is no, even just slightly, Northwoods, there's no forgiveness. I mean, you would just get chewed up. And that's why you see some of those huge numbers and huge scores. It's like they were just having a bad day, and you can't do it on that course. There's
no,
because there's nowhere else. like, if you're not getting off the tee, there's nowhere else really to pick up strokes. You just have to make forward progress out there. There are other courses where you can do other things to try and claw your way back. But at Northwoods, if you cannot get off the tee and move up the fairway, you're toast.
Well, I think Northwoods is, and typically when we see what I'm about to say, it's not in the woods. Because the woods a lot of times is a very straightforward game. You step up, there's one shot, you execute that one shot, you're going to do well.
Yeah.
Northwoods, I feel like, is a very golfy course.
There's
like
some choose-your-line stuff out there, yeah.
It's a very strategic, you know, you got to, it's a mental battle out there.
Yeah.
Because you have to be strategic as to where your misses are going to be, which gap, not necessarily which gap you're going to hit, because a lot of times it is one gap, but which shot you're using for that gap to guarantee is far forward progress, and if you mess up, the easiest scramble. And then you also have to know you're not getting out of there without some wounds. No one's going through Northwoods. I haven't looked at the scorecards, but I'd be shocked if there was a bogey-free round out there. I didn't hear of one this weekend, but there might have been.
I mean, Rendon shot that 9-under in round two, and I think he still had a bogey.
I'll look to make sure, but I'm pretty sure he did. Let's see. Round two, yeah, he bogeyed hole four and then just popped off after that. Let me just scroll and just see if there's any rounds without orange.
I'm
no.
sure there's not.
No, I don't see any. Because that's what the name of this game is like, you can even at Northwoods, if you shoot 4-under, you're in the mix, and there's 10 to 12 birdies out there. So if you get to hole 12, you know, the notorious par 5 that should be like a par 6, if you get to hole 12 and you triple it, you take an 8, you're not out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can go and get, I mean, Cole got hole 13, 14, 15, 16, boom. If you triple 12 and you pick up 13 through 16, 17 he missed, but 17 is very gettable too. You could easily just be net 2-under through that.
Yeah.
And that's the key of Northwoods.
The
hole 12.
Hole 12 average. I always
For MPO, let's see, average plus or minus. It averages 6.15.
I'm assuming that was the hardest hole.
Yes.
That's 6.15 is not that bad.
Well, it would have been over par if it was a par 6. So I had to think of it.
Well, yeah, I feel like I thought it was going to be worse. It is crazy. That is a lot over par, a whole stroke and some. But
let me see the birdie.
I thought
percentage.
It was going to be worse.
1% birdied it.
See, that's when it's not a good hole.
Two people birdied it. Now, this is for round two. I was looking at just round two. I don't know about
the whole.
I don't know how to see the whole thing. I can only look round by round.
You can't
it looks
see
like.
All rounds if you go to stats?
I don't know. I mean, I can just look at whole round three. So we had two people birdie at round two, one person. Ricky birdied at round two and three.
That's amazing.
Shout out, Rick.
I just don't
know. You had three people birdie it. Well, two people, three birdies all weekend.
I just don't know where I stand.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Let's get through it. Let's finish talking FPO here, wrap it up. I think that's where we were talking Ella Hansen. It was surprising at Northwoods, but I think you're right. Northwoods is a course that does require distance in the woods. So if you're a player like Ella Hansen or even a Holland Handley who held her own, she didn't blow up in the woods like you might have thought she would have. It's if you're making that forward progress and your scramble's on, there you have it.
Yeah.
Now let's jump over to MPO because it finally freaking happened. This is my moment. I'm very excited for this. Cole Rendon has won beginning of August. So if you're not aware, post his performance at Waco, which I believe it was a third place showing at Waco, I made a bet with Trevor that Cole Rendon was going to win this year. And essentially what was going to happen is if Cole Rendon won, whatever month he won in, from that month forward, Trevor owed me Chick-fil-A once a month. If Cole Rendon went the whole season and didn't win, I had to buy Trevor Chick-fil-A once.
Yep.
That was the bet. Shook on it back in Waco. We've had a few moments. Open at Austin, he played well. OTB Open, he played well. He's had a few hot rounds to open tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't been able to put it all together until this weekend, and he did it. Cole Rendon first place, Calvin Heimberg second, Ricky Wysocki third. This is crazy. Now, I do want to say I want my first Chick-fil-A meal to go to Cole. So this August meal, we'll figure out the arrangement. Maybe you'll just Venmo him. But I want him to enjoy this with me.
I wonder if he... I haven't seen him. Like,
he liked my story, he's aware.
So he knows about the bet.
I don't know if he knows about the bet, but he's aware that you owe him Chick-fil-A.
Okay. I was going to say, like, I feel like... Not to be those guys, but I feel like we gave Cole a lot of press early. Like, now he's a big deal, but like back then, you know, we were kind of putting him on the scene. You were putting him on the scene.
Twitter bio for months has been Cole Rendon's number one fan.
That's
and
what I'm
that
saying.
True. I own socks that have Cole Rendon's logo.
That's
on
what I'm
them.
Saying. Like, I wonder. I wondered if Cole's aware of the bet.
If not,
if
he
was
is
in
now.
His mind, you know, when he was walking down 18.
Probably. But yeah, so Cole's getting the first Chick-fil-A's on Trevor. That's going to Cole, and then. From September on, I'm getting Chick-fil-A once a month. I'm very excited for that.
What, four meals?
I'll get four meals and one to Cole.
It's not bad. The way it ended up paying out, not too bad to where, like, I basically, if you look at it, I would have won a maximum of like $10, one Chick-fil-A meal ish, and I'm gonna end up giving up 50. Yeah, so like.
I told you it happened in August.
Not the worst ratio. You did tell me. I mean, listen, I said from, like, you can watch the clip. I said I never made the bet, like, Cole Rodolin isn't good. I made the bet, like, it's very hard to win on the there are more surprising people that haven't won this year than Cole Rodolin winning. And I made it pretty far into the season. We only had till, you know, really, we only had August and September. And then there's, like, one event in October or two or whatever. So, you know, I made it very, very far. I'm pretty happy with that. But honestly, seeing this is what it's all about. This is what the bets are always about. This is why we make them on the show.
Now, I'm going to just give you a piece of advice.
Don't bet with DGA.
If DGA is involved, don't take a bet
with
me.
That one was way crazier. The Cat one was way crazier because that one was like, the Cordon one was more of like a, yeah, I technically the odds are greatly in my favor. I'll take this bet because like, winning is just hard. And at the time, that was like his first good finish. And though he has flashed the podium a few times this year,
he hasn't had the greatest
season. He's
had some
bad finishes too. So like I was feeling very confident. But the Cat one was ridiculous because that one I just did not think she was gonna go to DGA. She was like the top free agent in FPO. So I guess I need to stray away from
if
the DGA. DGA
is involved and I'm making a bet.
What's my next DGA? But hey, that's why we make these bets because
Andrew Marweed wins.
It was very
bet me now.
No. It was very fun, like watching that all happen.
It was electric.
And just like everybody knew what was happening.
I tweeted my Chick-fil-A order.
It.
I did. I
you
exited. Sorry.
It, yeah.
I tweeted. I'm sick of it.
People like correcting themselves on Twitter like are funny.
It says repost instead of retweet now. I hate that.
Ew.
Yeah. I tweeted after his drive on hole one, which he pumped. Like it was incredible drive. After his drive on hole one, I tweeted my Chick-fil-A order and just said, here you go, Trevor.
Well, the event's under protest because he did footfall on 13 and nobody called it. So I'm putting the event under protest.
Is it? It's kind of like in basketball. Does someone foul if it's not called?
Did you watch the Jared Goff clip from that interview? They were like, they're asking about the the pass interference in the Saints game back in the day, and he was like, "Did they call it? Did they call it? No, then it wasn't pass interference." Like, I love that.
That's fair.
I was so funny though. Hunter and I were talking like last week because I think I kicked my disc or something, and you were like, "Oh, footfall." And I was like, nobody's ever calling that. I'm like, but it is a foot fault. And I was like, I wonder how often it happens on tour. Because like when you're doing a run, the run up to plant foot behind your lie is already such a silly, like it is really hard to do perfectly. You get used to it to some extent, but people foot fault all the time. And like if somebody just barely kicks their disc or steps on it just a little bit, there's no advantage being gained there. The advantage is if somebody foot faults to where they're way behind it or to the right or the left. Like, significantly. And sure enough, Cole Rodolin on hole 13, he gets out of position to the left and throws that crazy vertical, super difficult shot, slips on a wet hill and kicks the mess out of his disc. And like, yes, by the rules, that was a footfall.
It's the spirit of the game.
Spirit of the game. Nobody's ever going to call that. But I will put the event under protest.
That's fine. You can
protest. You have 24 hours to respond, PDGA, as to why you're not upholding your rules.
They can't use video evidence.
Dang it.
And even if he had the footfall called, it's just a stroke penalty.
Ooh, it would have turned him around.
He's the one by five.
Four. You know that's not how that works.
Yes,
it was hole 13.
Anyways, he played.
Calvin Heimer would have aced like three more times then.
That's funny.
So I can play that game.
Cole Rodolin played very solid all weekend, but that final round was something to behold.
Shooting hot in the final round when you have the lead and you're getting chased by somebody who shoots another scorcher. Check that one off your list.
Yeah, Cole, he couldn't miss, and even when he did miss, the course was like, no, you're winning today. Like, for instance, hole nine, I think
luckiest
it is.
Luckiest player ever.
It was a very lucky round. I think it's hole nine, the one before the bridge hole, the par four.
Yeah.
He threw his shot.
I think so.
Everyone knows it's OB.
Mm-hmm.
Commentators know it's OB. I mean, the disc, everything about that shot was OB. Then he steps up and it says putt for birdie, and he bangs it. He was in bounds somehow. No idea how that stuck. Then you fast forward a few holes. Hole 10's the bridge. It's 8 because 9's the bridge. 10's the hole Calvin aced. 11, the forehand. He saws it off a little bit, a little too high. All signs point to going OB. Hits like a 3-4 feet, maybe like, an inch shy
puts
of
the
OB.
Brakes on.
Somehow gets a backspin towards the basket.
Crazy.
Makes no sense. Then he hits the water tower. On hole 12, stays in bounds. It has a little simple up and down. I mean, it's true. He had several breaks that just went his way, and when it's your day, it's your day. Because like,
day, man.
Here's the thing: if going into that final round, you would have said, "Hey, Calvin Einberg is going to A, have an ace, a sick ace, but more importantly, B, shoot 13 under," I would have said, "Oh, Cole lost.
Yeah,
there's no way around it."
I would have said so too.
Cole. And instead, Calvin lost a stroke to him.
It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, Cole statistically one of the most dominant performances for this tournament. First in fairways. First in C1 and C2 in regulation, first in birdie percentage, first gain tee to green, and he was 95% C1X putting, which puts you in 14th place these days on the tour for a tournament. If you put 95% from C1X, that's just a fun fact. I don't know how that's even possible.
So yeah. He was 14th?
You can fact check me there, but I'm pretty sure he said 14th. Maybe it was, I know he was like a good bit down
disgusting.
The list.
Well, because so many guys.
So many guys don't miss.
Proctor, this Brawley Suey. Now, Brandon Cawthorn, DNF, so I don't know how much he played, but they all went 100%. Calvin was 98% C1X. Evan Smith, 98% C1X. Andrew Marwee, 98. Isaac Robinson, 97. Raven Newsom, shout out him, 97. Owen McCall, 97. Brent Hanu, 96. And then you have Emerson Keith, Nate Queen, and Cole Rodallin tied at 95.
It's like kind of impossible to get up those things.
That's gross.
But in any case, yeah, he put the lights out. And, man, he was just calm, cool, and collected. Very smooth player. He throws a lot of smart shots. He was like, you could tell he was definitely really trying to collect himself and keep himself collected. There was a lot of focus there.
Yeah.
But it worked, and his putting was just phenomenal. He made a lot of putts. That straddle putt he had, I believe it was on 13. Yeah. If like from behind the tree, kind of looking down at the water. I mean,
well, the guy had,
that was ice cold.
I'm trying to see this final round, his putting percentage. He was only 33% C2. Okay, but I guess the ones he hit were very important or felt important. He had several putts that felt with the situation. You know, a lot of them, some of them were to save par. That's round one. Sorry, round four, he was 50% C2. That seems about right.
It's honestly, I feel like they should judge C2 putting just on how many did you make, because the percentages with C2 are always so misleading. It's like, how many C2 putts did you make, though? Like, that's the stat that always tells you how somebody was doing.
But there were several times where he had himself like a 27 footer for birdie or a 38 footer for
testers.
Birdie. And it was like, it didn't feel make or break. Early in the round, it kind of did. Like, you could tell, like, hey, if he misses this, things could go south.
Yeah.
And his putt just looked so smooth. There wasn't
really
a sign.
Really smooth putt, man. Steadies.
Yeah. A steady putt with steadies.
I brought him to fame.
There wasn't really a moment where it seemed like the nerves got to him, which was shocking. Because I didn't think he was going
to
do it.
Like you said, it helped that he did catch a few breaks to where he was never in peril out there that final round. If certain shots go a different way.
Even hole 10, I forgot to mention, he ran the circle 2 putt and it like lipped out. And have it stayed in balance because that OB's close behind it.
I would say another thing to consider is that he didn't have to deal with Calvin being on the same card as him. I think sometimes that helps a chaser because they are sneaking up on somebody. But a lot of times, too, if you're playing hot, you want the guy right next. You want to be the guy taking the tee from the dude who's in the lead, and he has to watch you parking every hole. But yeah, 14 under to hold off Calvin like that was a sick way to get your first win. And I, you know, as much as like I had that bet going and it was like, well, we'll see what happens. Cole Rodallin is legitimately very good. I think he's shown that a few times this year, and now with this win, which is very impressive. And I think he's 18.
I don't know, he's young.
I think I heard 18 years old. You can fact check that. But I think, because I think I heard Ian say like he wouldn't have a comp for him if it weren't for Gannon Burr.
In 2021, he was 17. So he's
probably turning 19.
He's probably
turning
19.
I think I heard 18. So he's very young. He's definitely an up and coming superstar at this point. I mean, that's a very legit way to get your winning started, for sure.
Yeah. Now,
super impressive player. And if, DGA, man, shout out. Good for DGA. And also, like, I've been saying this for weeks on our weekly warehouse thing. If you're not throwing DGA yet, they've got really good discs.
You know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do something here.
Oh, my gosh.
DGA. We have a decent bit of DGA in stock on our site. If you head over to foundationdiscs.com and you use code CHICKEN in honor of the Chick-fil-A bet, you use code CHICKEN, we'll go 15% off all DGA for, I don't know, the next day or two.
If you
put in the notes, Grip Lock sent you, we have a limited amount. I'll tell the warehouse guys to throw in a free Grip Lock sticker.
If you sell out the DJ on our site, I will write a one-page letter to Colbert Allen about apologizing for doubting him, and I'll read it on Grip Lock next week, and I'll send it to
him. That's very funny.
I say that because we have some DJ, but...
We don't have a crazy amount.
So if you sell it out, then that's what I'll do.
There you go. Okay.
I don't know why I did that.
See, this is how you back yourself into these corners.
Drew Gibson commented on their post and was like, he's like, Trevor just always betting with his emotions, man. That's why he keeps losing. I was like, well, yeah. Because all the gamblers are just one bet away from the big win. Yeah. That's how it
is. Now, what's your big win here, Trevor?
Yeah, I don't give myself opportunities to win most of the time. That's the problem, too, is usually I just bet against myself, but like there's not really anything I can win on the other end. It's just kind of like a consolation.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I roll.
Anyways, so use code CHICKEN. I'll set it up after this and if you put in the orders, we have a limited amount of Grip Lock stickers, but if you put in the notes, Grip Lock sent you, we'll throw a sticker in there for you. I'll let Jason and the warehouse guys know.
I'm with it. If I could throw out some recommendations, I know we have Quakes. Coron throws those. Excellent disc. I know we have some Steadies. Also a disc he puts with.
Does he throw the Squall?
He throws the Squall. Squall's we have a bunch a of Squalls. One. And he throws Hurricanes. We have those as well.
And I don't know if we have Hypercanes or not. But if you're looking for a consistent, overstable disc, we're basically just giving DJ an ad read here. If you're looking for a consistent, overstable Brody was in love with the Hypercane for a while.
They've earned it, man. They've been in the shadows too long. I've got DGA in my bag.
So the other thing that was crazy, still includes DGA here, was if you're watching on live, you get to hole 7, and hole 7 always feels like, hey, there's going to be an ace here. And you get to hole 7 on live, and you have Andrew Marweed, sure enough, rings it up. Forehand, ace, boom. Then... a few minutes later, Ricky's putting on hole 7, and while he's putting, you just hear an absolute eruption. You don't know where it comes from. I personally thought they messed up the sound, and they're replaying Andrew Marweed's ace. Yeah. That's what I thought was happening. But then you hear Philo go, now I don't know what just happened, but something just went down somewhere on the course. We're going to find it for you. And like a minute later, they cut over to Calvin Heimberg teeing on hole 10, and he threw this gorgeous hyzer flip to slow turn.
It was sick.
Dead center ace. I mean, it's what, like 430-some foot downhill?
It was a bomb.
If it didn't go in, possibly going OB. Yeah. Something to think about.
Was it a good shot? Maybe not.
But it was a great shot.
Yeah,
it went in.
A great shot because it went in the basket.
So that was crazy to watch live because it was just like you had the hype of the ace, and then next thing you know, you have another hype of an ace.
There's nothing more fun than hearing a roar like that and knowing a highlight's coming. I also, you rarely see aces happen when people are like in contention, and especially like Calvin, who was chasing like that
got him to what, within two?
Yeah, live? that ace meant a lot more than just it was a cool ace. It was, you know, people
saw it on Calvin's face.
A lot of times people will make, like, I know Max Homa did it the other week where he had a hole in one, and like people were posting about it, but he was down by a ton, so they post it with that, the YouTube title of that. It's like Chris Paul makes three-pointer to cut lead to 28 or whatever. And people like to throw that one in there, but this one like meant something. It reminded me of like Paul in Vegas that
Thunderbird
one time.
Days, yeah.
And that's always so exciting because like the player is hype. Like that was for Calvin on the Calvin emotion meter.
That was
like a 12 out of 10 right there. That was crazy. That was crazy. I know he had all those expressions.
Well, this is also a moment like people have been asking about Calvin's clutchness and all of that.
Poor guy, man.
The final round.
Nothing he could do.
Calvin clutched up. Calvin went out and he shot 13 under. There was nothing. He had to overcome shooting 13. He lost by 5, I believe.
Yeah.
He would have had to shoot 18 to tie for the lead that final round.
He left a couple out there, but like that wouldn't have mattered. And it was on the way of a really good round. So it's not like he.
Yeah. That's like he showed up the final day, putted extremely well, shot 13 under. Colbert Allen just shot one better. Colbert Allen just showed up and had a better day somehow.
Colbert Allen kind of looks like Kevin Jones, by the way. Is Colbert Allen the
He kind of looks like Urban Meyer.
Oh, did I see somebody tweet someone that
said,
around?
Someone said his dad's so proud, and it was a picture of Urban Meyer on the sideline.
That is so funny, dude. But I think there's a Kevin Jones resemblance a little bit. I think they got a similar face, and, you know, is he the new Kevin Jones?
Well, Prodigy has that, like, marketing, what you call it? Formula or something that involves looks.
Yeah,
Colbert Allen fits
right in there, dude.
Is he the next Prodigy signing?
Prodigy CEO is staring him down like, I like something about this kid. I just can't put my finger on it.
Ricky and Calvin both got themselves in the mix. They both had overall solid performances, second and third out there. Not really surprising. Ezra Robinson was kind of surprising. He had one, we'll call it an off round. I think he shot even at Northwoods. But other than that,
Ezra Robinson's been really good this year.
Very, very solid performance
he's,
out there.
He's been on tour for a long time. I didn't really realize this till the other day. But he's also, isn't he younger than Isaac?
So I thought he was older, but someone said he's younger.
I think probably what happened is he didn't go to school. Isaac went to school. And so he got on tour a lot sooner because I think he's been on tour since like 2018 or something.
I don't know, yeah.
But he... yeah, he definitely got a little yippy down the stretch. I saw him clank a few putts. It looked like something I would do.
Well, he clanked a putt on one, but then went on a birdie like 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
right after.
He was able to pick it up after he would miss a few bad putts, but it was still a solid performance. I know he's probably bummed because he was in a little more position to take a better finish there, but you know, he played solid. It was a good event.
Yeah, so that's the results, but we got to talk courses now really quick. So what are your thoughts on Northwoods as a course? And then also on Eureka as a course for the long-term future of this event.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention my bold prediction almost came true.
What was your bold prediction?
That both the winner would have... actually, I didn't look at FPO yet. I'd have to look at FPO. But MPO, he had one of the hot rounds at Northwoods. I said he would have both. And then he was two off the second one. But he did have two hot rounds, but didn't quite get it. Also, if you heard me pick AB to take third, he missed the cut. So there you go. Analytics. I think Eureka, and I've always felt this about Eureka, is I think it is a pretty good course overall, at least from me looking at it. I've never played it. I think there's some really good holes. I think the holes that kind of play along the water are really good. But I think longevity-wise, you know, we throw over a baseball field or around a water tower. And the water tower, I think I can get behind a little bit. I think with disc golf, like we have to like almost make this list of like what's an okay gimmick thing that like is kind of natural looking and what isn't. And I think like baseball field, no, it's a different sport. I think once you go to a different sport, you cross the line. Water tower, I think I'm okay with water tower. but it's like, it's honestly like its own thing now. Mozzarella sticks, not okay. But yeah,
unless they're from Sheetz,
yes,
then they're good.
Then they're good. I think Eureka plays pretty well. I don't necessarily believe that that course will be around forever because just that property and what it is.
Well, here's the counterpoint to that. This has to be the biggest event in Peoria every year.
That is a good point. Maybe, yeah, at some point, if you live and die on kind of the smaller town situation, you may just become that town's thing.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, in Lynchburg, disc golf has become a pretty big deal around here, and we have really big university, but yeah, that is a good point. But Eureka, there's not a lot to say about Eureka, in my opinion. No. Northwoods is the more...
Let me talk Eureka for a second.
Yeah, you talk Eureka.
I've played Eureka. I think Eureka is a fantastic tour course because it offers a lot of potential for drama. There's enough challenge. There's
definitely
enough OB.
Separation.
But it's not really, there's not a lot of really gimmicky stuff. It's pretty straightforward, but it's like you have to execute out there.
Yeah.
It has a great atmosphere for fans to be there. Parking can get questionable, but they have enough that I think you can still grow there. The tough part is what you were saying is just like the optics of it.
Yeah.
I did see people were complaining.
Some of the holes look really good and some are just like, eh.
People were complaining about obviously the baseball hole because like hole one, gorgeous. Hole two works great. Three even works good. It's the baseball hole, and then you play alongside the baseball field. You don't really see it on coverage, but the baseball hole, I believe, is hole number 5. You throw over it, then 6 and 7 are right next to it.
But hey, if the event gets big enough, we just plow the baseball field.
The bridge is really cool hole. I'm fine with the bridge.
That also makes the gimmick list. Bridge is good.
Yeah, bridge is cool. The water tower, I agree, is
that's
cool.
That's a real fun
and
line
then
to
the,
play.
The back part, fun.
Yeah.
Once you get to 18... The 18 has two question marks. I don't think I haven't been in a few years, but they used to, if you threw a good roller that cut up the hill too much, straight into a playground. Which there's the playground's closed for the events. So you're not like going to hit a kid, right. But you can find coverage of like guys having to throw from like inside the swing set and like trying to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's pretty awful.
So that's bad. The other thing is it's like a big concrete pad, but it's not a dock. I don't really know what it's for. But it's just like in the middle to where if you throw a forehand or something too low, it's there. So sometimes players end up short and have to throw like through or over that.
Yeah.
I don't really like that either. So 18 has two question marks, but that's just the give of a temp hole. I will say on the baseball one, someone put it on Facebook complaining about like, this is what's holding disc golf back. We're playing over baseball fields. And someone did bring up how the NFL teams used to play like share stadiums with baseball fields, and you would have like the NFL field and the baseball diamond, like two in one.
A little bit of a poor analogy there.
Is it though?
Well, A, it's a poor analogy because the game is not going to be affected by that field. Like a lot of times, like, well, for the playground example, I guess is a better. It's like that is a gimmick that's going to get in the way of the players. Number two, it's not because that the owner of that team didn't have the money. It's because they didn't want to spend it. So like that's a little bit different. It wasn't like football was a growing sport that needed that. That was like an owner. That's Oakland. He's talking about the and guess what they did? They moved to Las Vegas
eventually,
and
yeah.
built a bajillion-dollar stadium. So like that is a little bit. I don't think that's a great example because
it's not a bad one though.
And it's also not a good example because we're throwing over the baseball field. And also, it's not a good example because we don't have to go to the baseball field, right? We don't have to do that. We could play other courses. So like, I don't think that quite correlates.
I don't know. I like the idea. I like the person fighting it.
And it also wasn't good for the NFL either. Like, I don't like when disc golf is like, well, they did it too. It's like, if it's a bad idea, it's a bad idea.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a bad idea.
I don't think it's like...
Because I always thought it looked funny when you saw highlights.
I don't think you should justify your sports bad ideas with other sports bad ideas. I think that's a pretty poor way to grow.
Someone just brought it up. All right, go Northwoods.
Who are you? Now, Northwoods, I don't know. I've always felt a certain way about like super wooded courses on tour. I think that because we don't play a lot of heavily wooded courses, I think Northwoods is a lot of fun because I think that number one thing to have on tour, you know, is I think we need to have like diversity of courses. I think it's important to have, you want probably, I would say in an ideal world, you maybe want 70% of your tour courses, probably even less than that. You probably want like 60% of your tour courses to play to what the tour considers as their ideal model for a course. And then I would say you want 20% to play to one other side of the extreme and 20% to play to the other. And so I think that Northwoods would fall, if the model was like we want kind of like mixed courses, you'd want 20 to play really open and 20 to play really wooded. And I think this would kind of fall in there. So, you know, because we don't see this a lot, I'm never going to like rag on the really heavily wooded course. I think it provides interesting golf. They were able to cover it this year. They laid down that fiber cable. It seemed...
And they got a private network.
Yeah, it seemed fine to me. It got blurry a little bit at times, but it was like sufficeable, so okay. Yeah, I think that like the best players are still, you know, the best players that weekend are still going to rise to the occasion. You know, it's not like it's, you know, woods golf can be a little harsh, but guess what? If you hit the fairways, it still works out. My thing with Northwoods, at this point, you know, now they've got the coverage, I guess, sorted out. My biggest gripe is hole 12 is unacceptable. You cannot have 40-minute backups on a pro-level course on a tour. That's just not acceptable. And I don't know. I'm gonna really double down on this because last year we said these same angry things about coverage and then they fixed it this year. So maybe we get angry about this because it's like I understand like they want things to be a certain way. Like they want hole 12 to exist because of what it is, which I don't even know how I feel about a golf hole that only like a couple people birdie the entire event. I don't know how I feel about that. Part of me is like, okay, maybe that's cool. You know, par is relative, but like, and then part of me is like, well, but is it like, it all comes down to that. What are you trying to do with par, right? If you're saying, well, par is relative, it doesn't matter. Well, then why does par exist? So if par exists and you're designing a course to make par is supposed, like if you look at the PDGA's definition of par and like how par is supposed to be treated, then you're supposed to be able to make birdies on a hole. And when you have a hole that just like almost nobody birdies, I don't know how I feel about it. I'm not going to say I hate it because like it is kind of cool, I guess, but it's also like, does that make any sense? I don't know. But the bigger problem is definitely the backups. I just think it's unacceptable. I don't know what the solution is. I would obviously recommend, I think because hole 12 is like so precious to them, I guess I would recommend changing the holes around it first because you said that's kind of a part of the problem.
Well, part of it
there.
Is there's a short par three right before it.
Right.
That's definitely part of
the
problem.
So like I think that would be the start. But you just can't have that. Like you can't have a player shooting a really good round and then has to get the hole 12 and wait 40 minutes. I mean, it's just silly. Like, this is the Pro Tour. These are the best players in the world, which is, that's what should tell you that it's more so the hole than it is the players. This isn't an AM tournament.
Well, they did. So part of their solution this year, and might have done it last year too, was to try to trim the fat at the bottom of the field, because that was causing a big part of the backup was you had players in the morning that sucked relatively. They'd probably beat me, but go out there and really struggle. Here's the thing. I love hole 12. I think hole 12 by itself, I'm in love with it. Let me explain why. The shots it requires, it asks of you to make birdie, are very doable. All players are capable of it. Not all players, but Pro Tour level players are capable of it. It's a slow turning, smooth backhand turnover. You saw Rick birdie at both rounds. Then you throw a pretty tough shot up to the mouth of the gap. Then it's a tunnel shot. It is. I am capable of throwing those shots. What I'm not capable of doing is doing them all in a row. And any shot you mess up brings in a lot of trouble. And then when it brings in trouble, it's a very strategic hole of, okay, how do I save par? Eagle's not in play. I'm okay with that. I think that's where people get confused with.
No, that's fine.
It's like a par five. A lot of times it's reachable. This hole, eagle is not in play.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
A four is the best shot. But what I like about hole 12 is that stroke separation is there.
Oh, yeah.
People will take 13s on this hole and people will take fours. Very few people take fours, but it's not like the hole's broken because everyone's taking a six and it's like, okay, well, par should be six. No. The scores are all over the place.
Yeah, and that's why I don't get super hung up on it, because like at the end of the day, yeah, okay, I don't know how I feel about the idea that like nobody really birdies it, but maybe I think it's kind of like Northwoods on the tour. It's fun to have things sometimes, just like maybe once or twice, and like having one hole on the course that is kind of like this badge you get to add to your, you know, your uniform if you are able to birdie it. Then, but yeah, okay, that's fun. It's just the backup, and you're because
well,
you're right.
Here's my solution to the
it's
backup.
Not like any of the players or any of the shots are unfair. They just are really hard to do back to back.
My solution for the backup is, I think what causes backups is bad shots early and bad shots late. You have to scramble out of, and the scrambling's very hard. So here is my solution. I think early in the hole you make that whole right side OB. So if you get in the right crap, your OB, you just drop it in the fairway, and I think you add a mando on the left side. So if you early release, you have to go to a drop zone that's in the middle. Both of them stroke punishment. So the hole is just as punishing, just has as many teeth, but both of them play faster. So you get the same strokes. It might make it a stroke easier, but it also makes it a stroke harder depending on how you look at it. And it progresses that faster. And then I think you'd have to look at something similar up towards the tunnel shot. Either make scrambling easier when you get up to the tunnel shot, or make some mandos or something up top to where you take out some of the decision making. That's the only reason I don't like it. But on early, I think especially, the key is get off that par three, get off the tee. And once you get off the tee, get people moving. There's going to be backups up towards the top, but you can get people off the tee and moving that tee shot with some OB on the right and a mando. And then, you know, up top, I think if it was up to me, I would just clear out, because the trees are really tight up there. So you get in there, if your disc goes into the right or left stuff, you find your disc quickly, but then you're up there and it might take you two or three shots to get back to the fairway, and it's tough in there. I would just cut down a few trees in that upper tunnel stuff so that scrambling's a hair easier. And I think if you add the OB at the beginning, it would balance itself out. Yeah. And I think those two changes would make it progress a lot faster.
Well, it's one of those things where I just want to know, like, there's so many things in disc golf where it's like, okay, where are their heads at as they're running this tournament? Like, do they care?
They do, because you saw them change the rating minimum.
Right. So like there's some amount of care, but like at what point are they like, okay, this is fine? Because like the backups, man.
Adding a par four before it would also help.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the easier par threes. It's not easier necessarily in relation to par, but scrambling's really easy on it. It's a easy little turnover shot. Most of the time if you mess up, you're in the middle and you have a jump putt up and down.
Yeah.
Very few people bogey, but people who do, it's typically just a single bogey. So the card plays that hole very fast.
Yeah.
And you play that hole really fast, and then the tee shot, if you mess up, I mean, we saw Brody, he got there, messed up the tee shot, messed up the second shot, messed up the third shot, messed up the fourth shot. His fourth shot got him to where a drive lands. But you have one player who was towards the top at that point, so it's not necessarily a skill thing. It's just you miss your tee shot a little bit, and right now you're punished by having to scramble. And if you play zigzag golf, it just took him four shots to get where a tee shot should go. Right. You have three people that do that on a card. Now you have a really long backup.
Yeah, definitely the OB would probably help. I mean, as long as they're making change, I think for me is like, as long as they're making changes each year to like move in that direction, that shows that like they're still trying to do something. That's all I really care about. It's when it's just like, it's whenever the next year comes along and they hadn't made any changes and they're basically just saying, no, we're okay with this whole being backed up an hour. That's where I'm like, oh, why are you okay with that? But I don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe enough players don't care about it, but I feel like they should. Like, I wouldn't want to get to the middle of my round and have to wait. I mean, that just feels like torture.
Yeah.
No, like, that would be awful.
Now, the final thing I want to say about Ledgestone is we saw L.L. Bean come into Worlds. We see, what is it, Merrill Shoes?
Merrill.
Now in Merrill. Merrill.
Merrill.
Into Ledgestone. And I think what it kind of sparked something in me where, because we as disc golfers really want the Under Armour, the Nike, the, you know, the bigger name sponsorship. And I think what we're seeing right now is actually something that's big time for the sport. Not a lot of people are talking about, like, getting these like more niche outdoorsy brands is a good gateway, I think, yeah, into it. So I think like right now we're looking at these big brands and thinking, man, I wish we could get a X, Y, or Z. I think we need to go more niche. Like, Merrill Shoes is somewhat niche. L.L. Bean is a little bigger. I'm talking niche. Like, let's get some freaking, like, a mulch brand or, like Unverfirth. I think they do freaking, like, I don't even know, seeding or something. Like,
yeah, like fertilizer.
Like, let's find some, like, niche brands, get them. So that's the initial outside money. Show that it pays off, it works, and then we can start pitching that to bigger brands. I don't know. It's just a model I noticed recently of Merrill Shoes, L.L. Bean, that I'm like, let's... Maybe this is kind of the route, and I'm hoping the Pro Tour is looking at this and that's what they're doing, but I think that's the route, because outside money, obviously, right up until a certain point.
What was the Ledgestone purse?
I don't know.
I'm actually curious.
We can look it up. But
there was something that, like, it had actually gone down since like that record year. I'm curious to know if they've gotten it back up to that yet.
But that's what the, that's not presented by Ledgestone. Where's the Ledgestone open? There we go. But I think that's something that, like, we're kind of overlooking is up until last year or two, outside money in disc golf has come from us, the consumers. We've been buying discs that is going to the manufacturers, that is going into the Pro Tour. We've been paying for DGN that's going to the Pro Tour, that's going to the purse. Where growth is really going to happen with these purses is when outside money, as in, like, not coming directly from our pockets, but people trying to sell to us. So, like the Merrells, like the L.L. Bean, that money coming in for marketing, because we have a really good product now, but I think we've been waiting for it to come from the big guys, and it's like, let's get it coming from a little bit smaller, huh? So the added cash this year is combined between MPO and FPO about 82,000, it looks like, and the total purse, total division value is 100, and I'm trying to do math really quick, $139,000, I believe.
Oh, that's big. That might be their biggest year.
I'll tell you the numbers, and you tell me my math is right. $97,600 for MPO. FPO is $42,398.
97 plus 42?
Mm-hmm.
139?
That's what I said, yeah. Yeah, 139 total purse.
Yeah, because like when they broke the record that one year, it was like 106, I think, and then it like kept going down.
But was that MPO record or was that
no total purse?
Okay, there you go.
It kept going down year over year, but 139, that's high. That's really good.
Well, yeah, Cole Dahlin took him $12,500.
Yeah, he got a bag.
And Missy Gannon took him $7,000.
So Cole Dahlin has won, I think it was 57K in his career.
He's won 48.
I don't think they've added
in his career.
I don't think they've added.
Oh, they haven't added 12.
Statmando has. Shout out Statmando.
So that's 60,000.
So he's won 60K, and I believe 40 of it has come in the last 12 months, according to Statmando.
That makes sense. I mean, 30, it's going to look like, if they haven't added it yet, which
yeah,
they haven't. 33,000 is this year,
this season. Yeah.
Good for him. All right.
Let's go, Cole.
That's Ledgestone. Let's hop into some Trevor's Trivia, fan favorite segment.
I got a really good question. Every once in a while, I move away from a straight up game and just find a really good trivia question.
Nice.
Really changed up on you. So, Cole Dahlin, notably, he has not won an A tier.
Yeah.
He won an Elite Series before he won an Elite Plus,
mm-hmm.
Your favorite event. Second favorite.
A Pro Tour event.
Yeah. Favorite Pro Tour event. He won that before winning an A tier.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know how the tiering system works in the PDGA,
it goes Pro Tour, A tier, also Silver Series or A tiers, B, C, D.
D.
Now.
And there's NTs as well. And majors,
not anymore.
There was, is what I mean.
There was.
So my question is, who are the two previous players? So the two in most recent history. It's happened. I'll say it's happened. This has been since 2020. It's happened twice.
Since 2020.
Or since 2021.
Okay.
It's happened twice. and this is MPO or FPO, and this is to win an Elite Series, NT, or Major before winning an A tier in their career.
Parker Welk.
It's the easy one. Yeah, there's one more. This one will be a little tougher.
Since 2021?
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be FPO, but I could be wrong. I feel like FPO.
There were some people that I looked back at that were really close. Yeah. That like had just won an A tier.
Well, then, man. Because the only other person that would come to mind would be Isaac Robinson, but I don't think that's true. I think he's won an A tier. I'm going with Sayananda.
The answer was Connor O'Reilly.
Oh, he won the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge
in 2021.
At Iron Hill. Dang, yeah, I would not have got that one.
Isaac Robinson had won an A tier like a few months prior.
So he was close to just going straight to a major.
Yeah, there was some that were like him that were really close. But yeah, Connor O'Reilly. Never forget. I like kept scrolling back and I was like, I know I've heard this stat thrown out there before, and Connor O'Reilly, I was like, I remember we all were saying the exact same thing when he won. Like, oh my gosh, he never even won an A tier.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Now, he did win a kind of a weak NT, but...
And he also has done anything since.
Yeah. Is he still on tour?
I haven't heard his name in a while.
I think he did the vlog that I watched for the Open at Austin preview.
There you go.
So that tells me he's got to be on tour. Griplock Power Rankings. I think we first off put Connor O'Reilly in 10th. Thoughts, opinions?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so right now we have Calvin 1, Ricky 2, Gannon 3, Isaac 4, Eagle 5, Paul 6, AB 7, James Proctor 8, Simon Lizotte 9, Corey Ellis 10.
Okay, so I think we need to start this by like people that are definitely not leaving the 10 and people that could be leaving the 10.
Okay, definitely not leaving. So, Calvin, Ricky, Gannon, Isaac, Eagle, probably Paul.
I probably can't.
AB
could, because he just took a 75th and missed the cut.
Proctor's not.
Proctor played well. Simon played well.
So AB, what did Corey Ellis do?
That's another good question, but I know that AB played really
well. Corey Ellis just won a major, so we have to factor that in.
Yes, we do.
Did Ellis miss the cut? Or was he not there? Maybe Corey Ellis wasn't there.
Dude, he's probably working on his Z Metallic Zones. Did they release that stamp yet?
Corey Ellis DNF'd.
That is interesting. Wow. Instagram.
He was 7-8.
Straight to the Instagram.
What round was
this? Disc antagonist.
Round 3, he DNF'd.
Hit him with it. Or no, chain antagonist. There we go. Do we have a post? Unfortunately, I didn't make the call to not finish today. On Monday, I played 2 practice rounds. During the second round, I had some pain in my wrist and thumb. That's a bummer. But not enough to persuade me to stop. I pushed through the next few days of practice to film some videos. I've been taking some Aleve every morning. And up until today, as I warm up, my wrist loosened up and the pain goes away. During the round, I threw a shot and felt pins and needles in my hand. Oh, that's the worst. After that, I didn't have my full strength with my grip, and everything was an early release. I tried to finish the round, but blah, blah, blah. Seth from Disc Golf Strong feels like it's just from overuse. No more 2 round days for me. Okay, injured, hurt.
There you go. So he can't leave. Corey Ellis can't leave. So AB is the question mark here. Let's go AB compared to Rodalyn.
Yeah, but unfortunately for Rodalyn, and I love throwing in a winner, but he has had some recent good finishes, but like he has some bad ones.
Well, we're gonna look from what, May on.
Yeah,
May, June, July. Cole Rodalyn's 4-2-1 against AB.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
He has him at Ledgestone. He got him at the Preserve because Rodalyn did just go 2-1 from Preserve and Ledgestone. Got him at the Preserve. Lost to him at Des Moines. Tied him at DDO. Lost to him at Portland. Got him at Beaver State. Got him at OTB.
I mean, just the fact that he's gone 2-1, like he's going in the power rankings.
I think we slide him into 10 and we move. That would move Proctor up to 7, Simon 8, Corey Ellis 9, and then Cole Rodalyn 10.
Yeah. I think, and I'm towards the top. I don't know if we need to shift anything around.
Let's just look at the UDisc world rankings and just see
here. Well, that's not... Rodalyn's like 8th now in
He's
the
8th.
World.
Yeah. He moved up 13 spots with that win. But I was just saying that there's any player like up here that we're just not even... Kyle Klein. Like, we weren't thinking about Kyle Klein right now.
He didn't play that well this week.
But you can comment. Are we just missing him?
You can. I mean, we've definitely used him as in our comparisons.
Okay. Now I think we just leave it. Are we happy with
I'm fine with that.
Because Calvin came in second, Ricky came in third.
Everybody
what
on that
Gannon
list,
do?
Everybody, he didn't play great. But he finished inside of Brody, I think, so he must have been top 30.
Flip again in an Isaac situation? What did Isaac do?
Now, that I don't know about. Yeah, we actually need to look at Isaac, because I know Gannon, I think, was top 30.
When you search Robinson, you see Ezra first. Isaac came in 15th.
Okay, respect.
He did fine. Burr came in 24th.
The boys are all right.
So, that's Isaac, Gannon, they're fine. Eagle, I don't think, played.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, if he played, he missed the cut. Yeah, no McMahon. Yeah, he did not play. No Eagle. Actually, I saw that because he was vlogging out in a Colorado course. Simon played good, so he's fine there. Okay, I think we're happy with that.
Yeah. Our power rankings actually played well this week.
FPO, we have nice. Kristen 1, Own 2, Kat 3, Missy 4, Haley 5. I think Missy's got to move
Missy's
up.
Missy's going to jump Kat.
Just jump Kat, or do you think she jumps Own 2? Probably
Own. We got to look at the comp, but it could be. She's been good this year. And Own hasn't been playing a ton. She just kind of got back on it. But if it's close, like even if she's down one and she just won though, like I'd be okay putting her in second.
Let's see. Missy's 1-3 against Own.
That's not great.
See, I think we put her third. Okay. I think it goes Kristen, Own, and then Missy.
We're going to have to look at those other slot spots as well because both those
Kat,
players
I think's
just
fine.
She just played really bad.
But she's
bad.
Played solid all year. Haley's in question.
That's not true. She's got a few wins
Katrina
this year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. A few wins get you in the top five because no one else has a few wins. Yeah,
let's look at Ella because she's had a few good ones back to back.
Okay. Hansen compared to King.
Yeah.
3-1 against Haley.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
All right, so we're probably going to go Ella Hansen. Over Haley King.
Yeah.
And let's just put Haley King to Allen just to make sure. Oh.
See, I think Kat's a fraud.
Okay.
But it's because she has the win. Haley and Kat both have the wins, and that is where it's difficult. But in between, they just stink. Because, Haley won and then Kat won in back-to-back weeks or something?
Something like that. Yeah, in this stretch, Ella Hansen's 5-3 against Kat. But Kat...
I think Kat's out of there.
You want Haley to stay, Kat
gone? I think so.
And then we had to put Ella...
Because I don't think we had to worry about Kat winning until, maybe the end of the year.
All right, so we'll go Kristen, Own, Missy, Ella, Haley.
I feel good about that.
All right, there you go. That's the power rankings, and that's the show. Is there a tournament this weekend? I don't think so, but I'll double-check myself.
Is Idlewild next?
Idlewild's next.
Do they go back-to-back, though? They might.
Or is D-Glow next?
Oh.
We have that. Idlewild is this weekend, so there will be a preview show.
Let's go.
Oh, yeah, back to back to back.
Yeah, this is where the stretch gets pretty spicy.
Idlewild, D-Glow, and then we have a little bit of an off time until the MVP Open, which starts the playoffs. Or D-Glow starts the playoffs.
Oh, D-Glow is the first playoffs. Yeah, that's right, because they cut harsh.
There's only one more event in the regular season.
That's crazy. Oh, hate that.
Idlewild next week. So the preview show will happen. Tune in to listen to all of our predictions and figure out what you need to know before the LWS Open at Idlewild kicks off this week, and it starts on August 11th. So we'll see you on the preview show, and then we'll be back here next Monday to wrap it all up.
Put some respect on LWS.
Put some respect on Cole Verdalen's name. Put some respect on.